Hi there. This is an assignment for Cals 692 by Tony Cicchetti. We will be talking about the IndigiMind Climate Action Program. My name is Tony Cicchetti. I'm originally from Berkeley, California, the unceded ancestral territory of the Ohlone people, and moved to British Columbia in 2010 to attend university. I've lived on Vancouver Island, on the Kwungan territory, specifically the Songhees and Esquimalt nations, for the past 5 years. And I'll be chatting today with my good friend and colleague, Christopher Jim. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Please feel free to introduce yourself. And
I'm Chris Jim from the Saanich Nation. My traditional name is Tsalpilim. I reside out of Sayoak First Nation, born and raised there. I have ties in the Saanich Nation, also over on the mainland in Chehalis. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. So just so the listener knows a little bit about our background here, Chris and I met out of the Friendship Center, where we both worked on the youth team, and have co-created and co-designed a land-based program known as the IndigiMind Climate Action Program. We just finished our first cohort 2 weeks ago. And so I thought first we'd chat a little bit about the idea of IndigiMind, how it came to be, and your role in that process.
My initial idea was bringing the cultural aspect to the land-based IndigiMind. So I really noticed the loss of the cultural aspect in the urban indigenous, and I just wanted to bring that back, you know, to a form where they get to access the stuff that they never really did living in the urban, you know, where they're living now. So they had a loss of touch of the cultural aspect. So bringing it back for them was something that I really wanted to do.
Definitely. And like something that we both strongly related on when we first started talking about this idea and kind of creating this vision, was that it was birthed out of the lack of cultural safety and the lack of cultural programming within the school district specifically. So although we were hoping to cater this program initially for the high school age, we've now expanded that to create more accessibility, and also so that our youth who are in the program can get school credit for it. But something that we saw was that there was a huge gap in this land-based programming within the school district. And I thought next we'd talk a little bit about the importance of land-based programming, why it's important, where the need for that lies, specifically in relation to climate action. Like we kind of birthed this program. The inception of it was during that wild heat dome of 2021 when we were outside and talking about, you know, the need to learn to adapt to climate change. So I think, you know, next maybe share a little bit about, you know, why do we need land-based programming specifically for the indigenous youth?
So my thought on that is, you know, reviving Mother Earth, because she provides so much medicine and food for us, and we need to get back to the ways as it was when my ancestors were living. Is we cherish everything, and we talk to the trees before taking a branch and thanking them for providing this medicine. So I think it's really something that needs to be brought back, is reviving Mother Earth, and, you know, giving her the strength to revive herself as well, just providing the stuff that they need to flourish, and bringing the youth out to that understanding of how precious, like, the wilderness is to us as indigenous. Because we survive off of, you know, the medicines and the food that is out there. And not having that for the wildlife as well is what we live off of is, you know, you don't see as much anymore because all the houses getting built, all the vehicles around. So I think it's really crucial that we revive Mother Earth and bring back the wilderness that we live off of.
Yeah, and something we were talking about earlier, Chris and I had this conversation actually once and had some technical difficulties and lost our first recording, but we were just chatting before this about the importance of reestablishing, re-envisioning, recreating that reciprocal relationship between, you know, us humans and, you know, our family that is the natural environment, the land and those who inhabit it. And reciprocal in the sense that we're not just taking. You know, we've spoken so much, you know, as we've created in Digimind about how, you know, where we are today is because of 150 years of taking from the land instead of finding ways to give back to the land. And you know, would you say that, I mean, in Digimind, part of what we're trying to do is bigger than just the program itself. It's kind of reshifting and reframing, but also like looking at our priorities differently. Like, what's important to us? What do we care about as people? You know, what do we care about as our priorities moving forward? And so maybe, like, you know, if you can touch a little bit more on like what's the importance of that, of relationship? You know, why do we need positive relationship with the land?
Yeah, like I mentioned, you know, back in the day, our ancestors, you know, survived off the lands and all the medicines that were given to us. So keeping that relationship strong to understanding what it is that we survive off of and all the medicines that we need, and, you know, building that relationship with the land and, like I said, reviving it and reviving Mother Earth and giving her the nutrients that she needs to keep, you know, building up these trees to make them stronger, or growing some food that we can eat. So it's just like, you know, growing your own tomatoes, you know, it takes so much to do that. So reviving Mother Earth and giving her the nutrients that she needs to survive is, you know, what we got to do, and build that relationship with the wilderness and all the trees. So, yeah.
Can you share a little bit about the importance of the cedar tree in culture and why it's so important, you know, as we see with climate change, you know, a drier climate is not conducive to the health of a cedar tree, but cedars are so pivotal and important in so many indigenous communities. I know in Sayot as well. Do you mind sharing a little bit about, you know, why and what it is about the cedar tree that is so culturally significant?
Yeah, so the cedar tree to us is, it's a protector for us. And we use it for brushing off all the negative energy that is on you. And, you know, brushing off someone who is not well is giving them the strength from the cedar tree, and thanking the cedar tree for giving us the strength to brush them off. And it is a big, if not the most honorable thing in our cultures, you know, the cedar tree, because like I said, it holds so much importance in our lives that we use it for hanging above our door to keep, you know, bad energy out, and brushing off your loved ones when they need to be picked up. So cedar trees are the most important medicine for us as indigenous, trying to keep those alive and well. You know, it's really hard to do, because it's, you know, very, very useful to other people as well, but not in a spiritual way for indigenous. So trying to keep those alive and well is really hard. But
yeah, for a little context for our listener, within the Indigenous Mind program, we have a 2-day extended cedar workshop where our youth get taken out by a local elder and knowledge keeper to learn how to properly harvest cedar and cure cedar. And then the second day of the 2-day workshop with different cedar that's already been cured, learn how to weave using a traditional method and learn how to weave headbands and bracelets. And I think that kind of segues into my next point or the next aspect of our conversation, which is like the importance of knowledge keepers and why we need to hold knowledge keepers, traditional knowledge keepers, up for their traditional ecological knowledge, but also like why it's so important for the youth to be in the presence of elders and why it's important for them to listen and learn, you know?
Yeah, so it's really important to have knowledge keepers, you know, present, because they're the ones who survived this long, and what they've went through and endured is really powerful, and having the youth there soak up all the wisdom from the knowledge keepers is something that we've got to, you know, hold up and hold tight, because the youth are our future, and having them be there to witness all the stuff that is being passed down by the knowledge keepers is, you know, is going to be what's going to be how the future will be. If they're not learning how it was for our ancestors back in the day, then how are they even going to, you know, pull through and live off the land if they don't know? So having, like I said, having all these knowledge keepers present with the youth is going to be very pivotal in what we're trying to do, and you know, doing all the work that's being done is really powerful, because we're seeing progress with the youth as well. So mm-hmm. I'm very excited and happy for the future to come if it keeps going this way. So
what do you think is the role of youth, Indigenous youth leadership in climate action? Like, what, why do we need youth voices?
We need youth voices because they're our future. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they're the ones that are going to be making the calls down the line. And if they don't understand or, you know the ways of our ancestors, then, you know, only time will tell is how life will end, or, you know, how the climate will be. So, like I said, having those elders and knowledge keepers there to pass down those teachings will be really, really crucial if they're there to pay attention, or, you know, if they're there to learn. So
definitely. Do you think you can, I think the last question I have is, you know, can you share a little bit about how in your lifetime, you know, specifically in Sayout, how have you viewed climate change impacting the community and, you know, traditional practices? Is there anything that comes to mind when you think of the impacts of climate change?
Yeah, so there's so much change, you know. Growing up in Sayout, we have bath holes for our new dancers that are being destroyed from the houses being built, because they're being built right where the bath holes are. And having so much traffic come in and out of there is damaging our medicine on our gakmin, our tea that we drink when we're not feeling well, and it helps us with sore throats and helps our immune system. So all that is being destroyed with all the traffic that's being in and out of there. So having all these trees getting taken down, and all the wilderness are leaving, and you're not seeing much wildlife there, and the fish aren't really coming in to spawn in our bay, and less crabs and clams because of the red tide. And so it's really hard for us to survive off of all the food that is, you know, being tarnished and destroyed because, or moved out of the area because of all the houses being built around the area and all the traffic coming in and out of there. So yeah, I think it's getting a lot worse than it was for me back in the day, catching fish off our beach or digging clams on our bay and having, deer or rabbit or even, like I said, the gachmin is a really strong medicine in our indigenous ways. So,
do you mind sharing with the listener what the gachmin plant is?
The gachmin plant is it's a plant that we use for tea, and we drink the tea for sore throats, and it also works as to getting the spirits out of your house. So you boil it and you just let it come to a simmer, and all the steam that comes out of there is it'll keep the spirits away. So that's how we use the gachmin, and we use it, like I said, as a medicine for sore throat.
Yeah, and something we've chatted about before is gachmin typically grows in the sand on the coastline, and because of coastal erosion, on the beaches and the loss of the coastline, we're seeing a decline in gachmin, which is a project we're moving towards through IndigiMind of cultivating gachmin and reintroducing it into the natural habitat. But I'd love to thank you for coming, Chris. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
This is the first part of a mini-series podcast about the IndigiMind Climate Action Program, a land-based program run by myself out of the Victoria Native Friendship Center. The second part of our podcast, I'll be interviewing our next co-founder, Nadia Salmanu, and we'll be doing that middle of the summer. The second cohort for IndigiMind begins next Wednesday, May 31st. We're looking forward to our second one. The first one was a big success, the inaugural cohort, which finished May 2nd of this year, 2023. So thanks so much for coming, and we hope everyone who's listening enjoyed the podcast.